Hey everybody, and welcome to this special episode of The Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. It's your friend Rick from Blind, and I'm here with Jack, and today we're going to take on Google. Jack, why don't you just start us off with what the heck is going on with Google this week?
I think Google has just gone crazy. I think they lost their mind. It's the weirdest thing. You know, we all love Google because it was so amazing. And Rick and I were talking before the show is that, you know, when we first looked at Google, your mind is blown, like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. Like, you could have all this information. When I was younger, Rick, I'm not sure about you, you would have to go to Encyclopedia Britannica, right? To like look stuff up. And now we have everything. Fast forward for those who are not, you know, who haven't noticed, last couple of days, Google was completely just being overly woke. So that when you would put in prompts and say, hey, can you give photos, like talk to text? And this is through their Gemini. Can you paint a portrait of the founding fathers of America, which should be pretty simple. And I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on American history, but I do know our founding fathers weren't like Nazis wearing the Nazi regalia or Vikings or Japanese samurai or all these others that they were shoehorning in instead of giving actually, you know, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson. They were, for whatever reason, they programmed it to be DEI friendly city, but they're just making it up. They're just making up history. And it'd be one thing if you would say, Jack, you're making this up. This is sell. No. And it wasn't even subtle. I mean, if you go on Twitter and take a look, there are a lot of them. So there are a lot of prompts. And every time they had these prompts, instead of showing what most likely would be a Caucasian person, you would find somebody who's not at all. Now, I'm not saying that this is like, it's not one of those cases where you're taking one for the other. It's just you're rearranging history. You're just changing it. It's like very Big Brother, where Google that's controlling what you see and what you read, and you're trying to change history because of what you believe as your doctrine, which is very frightening. It's very Big Brotherish, very 1984, because Google's doing it now. What happens if there's another, let's say, people get fed up with Google and there's a new, better AI platform. And now they're uber right-wing conservative. And then they push their agenda and everything. Equally, I think people will be like, well, it's like, that's not right. Let's just get the truth. Whatever the truth is, that'll be helpful, right? Like, you've seen those, right?
I have indeed. And I think for those listening that might not kind of you kind of grasp what is actually happening behind the scenes is, you know, Gemini with this AI tool where you're inserting a prompt and you're asking Gemini or this prompt to return a written response or even create an image for you. You know, some folks discovered that when they put in certain prompts, weird things would happen, right? And it was really around kind of to Jack, what he's describing, these historical events, right? Where if you were to put in the founders, paint a portrait of the founders of Google, like we know who those folks are. And the result ended up being like two Asian looking men, which is not true. Who are the founding fathers of America? Well, we know who they are. You know, they were English Puritans that sailed over, right, to the colonies of what's today the East Coast. And like we know what they look like and who they are, and we saw something entirely different that was being returned from the prompt. And these kind of issues happen over and over again, right, where things are very specific to a certain culture or even a certain ethnicity group or they returned something entirely different, which is ends up actually being factually untrue. And what I suspect is happening behind the scenes is this kind of feeling within Google that we need to correct for biases. So traditionally, other AI tools, other AI-powered image generation tools, when you would prompt it for something like, oh, show me a picture of someone walking a dog, it tended to show a white person walking a dog. And I believe what kind of caused these funny moments or controversy this week is on the back end, there must have been some instruction programmed in by Google to say, hey, you know, when you're returning a image of a person, make sure that whenever possible, we don't have this light bias, right? That we're showcasing diverse backgrounds and different ethnicities. And I think no one at Google really thought, like, the intention seems right and seems good. But no one thought that someone would type in, oh, show me what a Viking looks like. And, you know, Vikings were very specific to the Nordics in Northern Europe, right? Where there's no sun. No one thought to type that in and think, hey, it's weird that a black person is showing, right? Or an Asian person is showing, or the founders of Google, when we know who they are because we work at that company. We know the history behind that company or that factual event that happened.
Tell me what you think of this, and you won't hurt my feelings. Is it, I find that's more racist to do that because looking at it from the outside perspective, it makes it look like Google is saying we don't have enough people who of color and who are different than white people, so now we have to make that up. And to me, I think that's mortifying. I think that's kind of this low level of kind of making judgments that way they can't do it themselves, so we're going to do it for them, which to me seems way more racist and even worse. It's almost sounding like, well, you can't do it. These groups can't do it on their own, so we're going to do it for them because we're the great white hope and we know best and we're liberal and we're woke, and so we're gonna feature you and put you in a picture. Isn't that great? Right? I mean, it's shocking. Like, dude, seriously? It was shocking. It's like, you have so many different groups, Asians, Japanese, Greek, Italian, Jew, whatever, all have done great things. You don't, why make up things when they did great things? Am I
I
crazy here,
recently,
or is this like,
no.
it's a bizarre
And
world?
I also don't think that you're being uncharitable, right? Because we had Justin Zhu and Michelle Lee from Stand With Asian Americans, that civil rights advocacy group. And one of the things that stood out to me that they shared is, you know, even within the tech industry, at a company like Meta will say, you know, an overwhelming majority are Asian Americans, but if you look at the leadership, it's certainly not represented proportionally, right? And so you look at that and you say, hey, something seems wrong, right? Or you look at kind of higher ed admissions and, oh, like year over year, like the number of admitted Asians or Jewish Americans are this consistent, stable number, right? That certainly doesn't bear out in the facts of like the demographics, like the actual statistic representation. And so my kind of background, and this is kind of what the folks at Stand With Asian Americans said is, well, if you want to uplift these voices and have this representation, you don't actually have to like officially create it. Just go and open your front door and like look at the professional that's there. They're there. You're just not choosing to represent them or inviting them to be part of the conversation. But if you actually want to uplift them, then just do it, right? And like literally like open your door and go find them because they're out there, right?
Right. It's a good point. It's also lazy, right? Just fine. If you want to have, different representations, find them and champion them, right? So it takes a little extra work, but do it.
Yeah, and I mean in some cases like you don't have to do any extra work, right? There's some cities and there's some metro areas, there's some companies out there where it's majority minority, right? And you know where those are, and it's so easy to go out and find them, and you're almost spoiled for choice. And so I think it's a bit artificial, but a bit of a stretch to kind of say, hey, we're actually going to hard program, hard code this in to kind of create this diversity that we feel isn't there, when in reality, it's been there right in front of your face the entire time. You just haven't been looking.
Another one of my concerns is this. This is like a serious one in the sense that once a company does something like this, you wonder how can I trust them for other things as well. For instance, I was writing an article, and in part, I needed some data about immigrants to the U.S. because it's interesting. One of the things I put in the piece is that with having immigrants come in. And the data was showing that they tend to open up more businesses because, they can't come in. A lot of them come in, they don't speak English, so they're not going to be doctors and lawyers, but they start businesses. And then they work really hard, then they hire people and they grow the business, and then maybe they get another business and so forth, right? So now you have this situation where I'm trying to find data on immigrants and then also people who are coming into crossing the border illegally. So you have an idea of what's happening. Google wouldn't let me get an answer. I'm trying to find out how many, people. Is it 5 million? Is it 2 million? Is it 10 million? Is it what have you? And each prompt, I would keep getting this kind of, well, this is a complex issue. It's very nuanced. And then it would go and talk about why people want to immigrate. Well, all right, we get that part. But I think if you want to be an honest broker and you put yourself Google as sharing providing the information, I think it's your responsibility to provide how many people came into this country if there's a query for it. And why would there be any reason not to offer that unless there's a certain agenda at the organization and they care more about their own agenda than what's the truth and what's happening and keeping people informed? Because then the next step is you got to wonder what's going to happen with elections or what has happened in elections. Did you rig things to make one candidate look better than the other? Because now you start asking questions and you don't, and then how can you have that trust and can you ever get that trust back? And am I being too like overly dramatic or does that make sense, Rick?
No, it makes sense to me. And I wouldn't say you're too dramatic. It's the sense of, do you have credibility, right? Where, if you're asking a question like, how many, blah, 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 like grammatically and logically, when someone has that question in that sentence structure, the expected response or the expected answer to how many is a number, right? And so when your answer, it doesn't include a number. In fact, you're making the extra effort to kind of dance around to not provide a number. You seem a little intellectually dishonest, right? And alternatively, to your point, when you're going to that level of just being obtuse, I'm just going to be very frank, you lose a bit of credibility where, maybe they Google has never biased politically in terms of the news that they show or the kind of search results that they show about politics. Let's say that's the case and give them the benefit of the doubt. But when you're having these issues about credibility on these simpler things, naturally, folks will doubt your responses and whether you're neutral across the board. And that starts to hurt your credibility. I remember when I first used Google previously, to your point, yeah, I had to go to the library and I had to ask a librarian for help to find the right books to do my research. I still had to use a typewriter to write my papers for school. And when I had access to Google, it was a magic moment where it was so quick, and the number of responses, it would show you the number of pages, how many milliseconds it took to return the search result. It was a magic moment, right? Where you're saying, oh gosh, I don't need to go to the library. I don't need to like dig in. I can get the answer so quickly. And it's the breadth of the depth of knowledge in terms of what is being returned to me. I felt confident that I would have the right answer. Or I would be pointed in the right direction. And now it's almost to the point where that's not the case. Like I'm not wowed by Google, the product, in the same way that I was, to 5, 10 years ago, even with Gemini and this kind of new AI developments or products or innovation. You know, when you search something, sometimes it's wrong. Sometimes I'm looking for something specific, like a certain news article, and like the tab for news isn't even there, right? Or alternatively, you know, to your point, where it returns things that just I know to be fundamentally untrue, being an untrained eye and having no, you know, done no prior research, that's a bit concerning.
Rick, do you think that what happens with some companies when they're so successful and they make so much money that it's two things? It's kind of a built-in complacency. Hey, we've been doing this for so many years and we're successful. We're the best at what we do. And then maybe you coast on the former glory. But then also, you have this, you certain cultures develop and you have this echo chamber, and maybe you don't have people. You really don't have a diversified workforce because everybody has the same thoughts. So then when you do something, where will you program it? No one stepped back and wait a minute, that doesn't seem right. Let's talk about it. But instead, groupthink is that, oh, okay, yeah, we're doing the right thing.
I would go one step further than you, Jack,
Okay.
and I suspect that might be the case because, you know, let's take this Gemini image creation tool as an example. You know, either someone didn't think as they were testing to say, hey, give me a picture of a Viking, or give me a picture of a Native American chief, like things that are so specific, culturally specific. Because they lack that understanding of being actually truly inclusive, right? They're not thinking about these things. Or worse, they did test this and they did put it out and they got the result and they were satisfied with the result. And they said, well, this is the expected result. We are being more inclusive, like job well done. And I think in either situation, and you know, I want to be charitable and I want to give them grace and give them the benefit of the doubt that either thing could be possible. Like they just didn't foresee their tool being used in a certain way. Or alternatively, they thought, oh yeah, no, we knew. And this was the expected result. We just didn't like the backlash, or we didn't expect people to react in a certain way. Like, gosh, both of these two things are really bad. And I suspect what might have happened in either case is folks that are at Google, you know, they're earning really high compensation, great pay packages, great benefits, a lot of prestige in terms of a tech world or your resume. And maybe you don't want to be the person that speaks up and says, hey, ding, 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 isn't it weird that this request shows up something that just mismatches with the facts of reality or the expectations that that's how our product is working? Because they didn't want to get fired, right? They didn't want to be the problem, the blocker to this product or feature going out. Or worse, they didn't want to seem quote unquote racist or not with it in terms of the company culture of diversity, inclusion, and belonging. And I think either way, like maybe you just didn't want to be the person that's making waves and shaking the boat, or worse, feel like I could lose my job if I speak out.
It makes so much sense because if you're that odd person out that's not agreeing with the consensus, it's a very uncomfortable spot to be in. And it's much easier to say nothing and just walk away and like, I'm not going to get involved. I don't want to lose my job. I got it really cushy, as you mentioned. So I see how this all plays out. And I would even give them the best of intentions that they really thought they were doing a great thing and didn't really test it with a large enough group of people who could then point out what we're talking about now to say, huh, okay, I get what you guys are saying. And perhaps it was with the best of intentions. Hey, they want to do something they feel is good. But the results, I think it really harms the brand. And personally, I feel like if there's a great competitor, I'm going to go to that one because at least I got to try and see, hey, is that giving me, by comparison, just being an honest broker and give the results that I'm asking for without any spin?
I mean, I think that's the thing, right? Where I think now that we're all a bit more digitally competent or aware, like most of us now, we're just so used to kind of the technology that we're aware that these biases exist, or we're aware that like behind the scenes, like someone literally had to program and code this set of instructions in, right? That these things actually don't happen by accident. That maybe now we're seeing these different things of, oh wow, like something's going on here, right? Like I had this conversation with my brother. We both love to fly and travel, and he asked me this question, like, oh, does it seem like there's more freakouts on planes lately? Because he's seeing a lot of the social media videos and like, all of the news articles that are coming out, right? And he said to me, 5, 10 years ago, it seems like that wasn't the case, right? People would just go on and fly without incident, and you wouldn't have a picture of the wing falling off or something like that, or someone freaking out on the plane. And I think one of the things that I told him and that we kind of got to a conclusion about is I'm sure stuff like this happened 5, 10 years ago. We just all didn't have phones with
Exactly.
great cameras and internet in the back pocket, right? Where these things happened, but you had to be there to know about it. And now I can find out about what's going on in Italy or New York or wherever, right? Without trying. And that news comes back to me so quickly, and there's this quick, in almost instantaneous feedback loop. Plus, like the greatest awareness of where to find and access that information that we have today that we didn't have before. I mean, I say all of this just to say, I think it's great that we're being more aware of these biases that might exist within technology, and that we should kind of take a step back and say, you know, maybe 5, 10 years ago when I first used Google and I thought of it as magic and I just trusted in it, now I have the critical thinking to say, it's actually a tool. And this tool was created by someone, and maybe they had an agenda. Or maybe they all have, you know, biases as different people with different experiences that might be informing what I'm seeing. So maybe I should be thinking a little critically to search results or the things that are generated with the prompted through AI.
So what's your take on this? So, up until recently, I would have thought if you asked me, Google would be invincible. Now things are changing. And think about it. Apple for a while was like had the largest market value. And then to me, out of nowhere, for other people, they're probably like yourself following it, but Nvidia is now what, 2 trillion market cap?
Yes.
How, like, what the heck for people who aren't aware of this? And this is one of the Magnificent Seven keeping the stock market up. How all of a sudden, I guess, is this what happens? Sometimes you have a place like Google that's great, but all of a sudden maybe sunsetting a little bit, and then you have a place like Nvidia all of a sudden just boom, taking over. This is wild. Like, what's going on?
I think it's really funny where if you think about what NVIDIA does, it creates graphic processing units, right? Like GPUs or so called. And they're basically chips that went into computers. And they became so important in terms of processing power. They got famous with like Bitcoin and crypto because, you know, the underlying technology there is you have all of these computers racing to solve math problems to verify these transactions, and they would re reward Bitcoin, that currency, as a solution for processing the math problem the quickest, right? To verify the underlying architecture. And then now you have AI where everyone is creating all these prompts, and within milliseconds, the ChatGPT, the Gemini, you know, the Perplexity, the Liners, those software tools, they have to go and find this information and process and return that text or return that image so quickly. And it seems so fascinating that, you know, just the pace of innovation has sped up to the point where our expectations have also changed, where we expect all of this to be near instant. So necessarily the processing speed and the resources and the infrastructure has to grow more complex and more sophisticated. And now NVIDIA, this like boring hardware chips company that no one kind of really thought to care about previously, is worth $2 trillion with a T dollars. And it's only growing. It seems like every single headline is, oh, well, the increase in shares is up by this percent, or the market cap is now this, or, Jensen Huang, the founder and CEO, his personal fortune has now grown by X million
It's like
billion
he's like 58 billion,
dollars,
right? Is that right? Something like
right?
that.
Or something to that effect.
58
That,
billion.
I mean,
And it's not, and
it's,
it's gonna still go, right? Like this seems like it's still room to grow.
I think so. I mean, using my phone example with
Yeah.
like, my conversation with my brother, I remember my first cell phone. It was a piece of junk. Like it could survive like a nuclear blast because it was so hardy. But, it just did one thing, and sometimes it didn't even do that one thing, making phone calls right. It just would drop or be unclear. And now we have basically supercomputers in our pocket. The hard drives, the storage space are gigabytes now. Whereas I remember I went to school at an age where we didn't have like cloud or Dropbox or Google Drive. Like we had to use little sticks that you would plug into the USB slot. I remember being really excited, like, oh, I have like 128 megabytes, or like I have 512 megabytes, and it would cost like $100 plus. To have a gigabyte or something like that. And now the storage on our phones are much more, right? The cameras on our phones are much better than the expensive digital camera that my father bought me for a birthday gift. So it's just
Yeah.
so insane now that I think perhaps I'm not surprised, but I mean, these numbers are still eye-watering and eye-popping. My little brain can't comprehend how many zeros are in trillion.
Can I ask one last question? Do you think that a number of people who work at NVIDIA, who've been there a long time, garnered a lot of stock options, are they going to work harder because they feel, okay, I'm on this runaway train? Or in your experience from watching these things, does it become maybe a little bit of complacency? Because let's say I was looking at someone who was writing on Blind that I think he had $40 million worth of, NVIDIA stock. If you're sitting on $40 million, do you lose incentives? Do you coast? Do you not coast? Do you work hard because you want to keep that? What do you think is going to happen there?
I mean, I think it might be similar to what happened at Google in terms of the company and its success become so big and so great that you just feel like you're a drop in the bucket. That there comes a point where the work that you can do and the like impact or the output that you can create as one person is just only so much. Where you think, would the company really miss me if I just like goofed off or like slacked off? Probably not, right? Because the company is still going to be printing money. People are still going to need these GPUs to process like all of these amazing technology advances. Like that's no problem. But the problem ends up being when that one person that thinks this way ends up being 100 people, ends up being 1,000 people, ends up being 10,000 people, right? And that's kind of where the problem sets in, where, NVIDIA is very famous on Blind for not having performance improvement plans. They're very famous for never having done any kind of reduction in force or layoff, right? Jensen Huang, the founder and CEO, he is well known, almost like legendary within Blind and certain tech circles for being out in the open and telling employees, like, I really don't like firing people. Like he said that almost verbatim, and people, quote it to this day. And so when you work at NVIDIA, you're making millions of dollars already. You might have this mindset of, well, if I slack off, the company's still going to be making a ton of money. I still have my shares. It's still going to keep going up. maybe I could slack off and goof off and get away with that. And what's even better is, the CEO says he hates firing people. There's no performance plan that I can be put on to get shown the door. Definitely people are going to get complacent. And I bring up Google as an example because I think that's been the case recently with Google's layoffs that targeted folks that had been there for a longer time or have had really high pay packages, and they were blindsided. And part of that blindsiding might have been this sense of complacency where you've been at the company for 5, 10 years, your pay package is like 500, 1 million, $1 million or more, and you think, I'm invincible. And they got their ass kicked with the layoffs. And now they're thinking, oh crap, like, why did this happen to me? Right? Because they didn't expect it.
It's wild how these things play out. It's almost circular, because then also I'm thinking too, you got to wonder how many might say, like the last guest we had, Arvind Jain, to say, maybe I'm going to take my winnings, take it off the table, and do a startup of my own. And do that. So then you could also have a little bit of a brain drain. You got some people complacent, but then others who are really still hardcore building their own thing.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It's almost becomes at a certain point a no-win situation for these employers, and I think we're seeing that a bit in the tech industry. We've seen kind of these things like wane and crest, right? Like some companies have their heyday and others don't, right? Previously, Google was the up-and-comer, and now we don't hear about AltaVista. We don't really care about Yahoo. And maybe now we're at this point where we all care about OpenAI and ChatGPT. And maybe now we are not going to care about Google. Maybe they're next.
Wild. This is great. This is why people have to watch and listen to our podcast to stay current, to know what's going on, because you get the inside scoop of what's happening. So I appreciate your insightful take on everything. This is really eye-opening, like blowing my mind. And for people who are going to be watching this too, like how crazy these stories are. It's you can't make it up, but it's wild and it's amazing and it's interesting. And I can't wait to hear. I can't wait to see what comes next. Like, seriously, I'm waiting for the next crazy headline to see what kind of stuff that we could talk about. So, thanks, Rick. This is awesome.
Thanks, Jack. It's been fun.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.